Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from Production. Quite excited about this one because I'm joined by Zach, the CEO of Warp, which is quite a cool AI terminal, which we're going to talk a lot about later. It's something that I use every day. And so nice to have you on the show, Zach.
Yeah,
Tell us a
really
little bit more
excited to be
about you
here.
and what do you like to do? What do you like to do in your free time, your fun time? What are your hobbies? And also just a little bit of a background, where you come from.
So, hobbies currently, I like to ski. I live in New Mexico. I live actually where there's a ski resort. My wife works as a ski instructor, so every weekend I get to ski, which is pretty cool. I like to play guitar. I like to hang out with my kid. I have like a 2-year-old son. I like to read. I don't know. I try and do stuff that's not work, but I do end up, I gotta say, like with having a company and a kid, it's a lot. And so I'm mostly either doing work stuff or kid stuff these days.
Yeah, I love snowboarding. I go to Copper Mountain in Denver, not too
Oh,
far away
nice.
from you. Yeah, love Copper Mountain. But snowboarding is like a really, it's an escape. You know, you're just going down the hill and you're just away from Zoom calls and
It's the
the shore.
best.
Yeah, it's the
Yeah,
best. Yeah.
it's awesome.
Right. You were at Google before. For those of you who don't know, Zach, you were leading the Google Docs project. Tell us a little bit more about that. How did that go, and how long were you at Google, and how does the shift happen from Google to Warp? And for people who don't know, like what was your motivation behind starting Warp?
Yeah, so there's a lot there. So I was at Google for about 8 years. I worked on Google Docs the entire time. When I started, Google Docs was just getting going, and specifically, I worked on the spreadsheet part of it. And actually, over my time at Google, built a whole bunch of that. And then when I left Google, I was leading engineering across the Docs suite. Super cool experience. I mean, when I started, basically none of my friends knew that Google even had a document product. They're like, "Oh, Google has a version of Excel or whatever." I didn't know that. And when I left Google, everyone I knew basically was using the product, which was super cool. I learned a lot about, how to sort of do good software engineering, how to build things for scale. I mean, Google Docs has hundreds of millions, or probably actually I think over 1 billion people who use it now. And that's like a certain type of engineering and a certain type of like product development mindset where, if you're building something for that number of people, it really has to like work pretty well. It does mean you have to go like more slowly. You have to like really test stuff. So that was cool. I ended up, towards the end of my time at Google, just wanting to try and build something on my own. Google was awesome. It was an environment that was like pretty comfortable for me. Like I sort of knew how to like work in the context of like a big company like that. And I really wanted to see if I could, if I were to try and do something by myself and take more risk, how would that help me grow as like a person, as a leader? And so I decided to leave. I actually didn't go straight from Google to Warp. I did a startup in between, which was like a really, really good learning experience. Not at all like really a successful venture, but super, sometimes if you do something and it doesn't work that well, you can kind of learn a ton. And so I did that for a few years, and then I kind of took the lessons from that company. And when I started Warp, I had a much clearer idea of the kind of product and the kind of company that I wanted to build, the kind of problem that I wanted to solve. And so, yeah, it was definitely like a, journey, and like the, challenging to go from a place like Google to starting your own thing, but it's been really cool.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, Google Docs, obviously hundreds of millions or billions of people use Google Docs, and it saw that transition of turning like the static Word documents into live collaborative Google documents. So like people can collaborate like on the same sheet, which has been like such an important part of our daily lives now. But now you're doing the same thing with the terminal shell, what you did at Google Sheets, like making it more collaborative And you say, you know, how, so for example, correct me if I'm wrong, how Google Docs has replaced Word by making it like more collaborative. We want to do that with the terminal, right? So do you see the terminal as like the last piece of dead state in the developer stack? And why did it take like, so we are seeing like a shift in, so when I use Warp, I see a shift in the way we use terminal. Totally. Why did it take 30, 40 years to do that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So yeah, the original idea when I decided to start Warp was that I've always used the terminal as an engineer. I've never been really good at it. I've always worked with people who were good at it and seen that if you get good at using the terminal, you can get a ton of stuff done. It's just like such a power tool. It's like a chainsaw. You can do anything from coding to like Git or Docker or production work. It's like where you can do it, but it's a very hard tool, in my opinion, to learn how to use. And so the original idea was like, can we just make a version of it that works more like a modern product? And as to why that like hadn't happened, I can only kind of speculate. I honestly don't know. There is like, it's a kind of a hard tool to change because there's you know, very big like ecosystem around it of applications, and a lot of them assume that it works some way. And so in order to change the terminal, we really had to do it in a way that was compatible with the existing technology, but also we wanted to push the product experience forward. So that's one reason I think it was hard. And then with respect to collaboration, the original idea for the business behind Warp was, you know, to make the terminal not just a single player tool, but to make it something where your team could standardize knowledge around how to use it, where your team could like have shared sessions in it. And that was like the journey we embarked on. But when AI started getting really good, and even actually before ChatGPT, we started, you know, realizing actually the terminal is an incredible place to use AI, because like it's, you know, at first very simple things like translating English into terminal commands because they're very hard to remember. And then something more like the Claude Code concept, which Warp actually had pretty early on, where you could just, you know, kind of tell your computer to build things or solve problems. And so it's been a really interesting transition in the past couple of years, as just like the terminal now is actually way more important than it's been in a really long time. It's where agentic development is happening. And that was like a fortunate development for us. So at this point though, Warp is just, it's trying to be the best sort of terminal for building with agents. And all of the collaboration stuff that we built is actually proving to be super duper valuable, because building with agents is not going to be just an individual thing. It's going to be something that whole teams do. And you want the ability to sort of like track what those agents are doing across your team. You want to like be able to share their sessions. You want to be able to share knowledge with them. And so I don't know, it's like such a fun, interesting, cool space to be in. And the terminal has become so much more important over the past couple of years, which is cool.
A lot of interesting points, Zach. So we are saying that, is it like, I don't know the right word for this, the not so smart terminal. So for example, by the way, congrats on the funding. You bet like $70 million plus on this idea that the terminal should be smart. But if the terminal becomes ADE, does that mean like what we have been using so far, like Bash or something? Is there an argument that it's like Bash is dead? Sorry, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but let's say Bash is dead and it's being replaced with the natural language interpreter that is just using Unix commands as an assembly language. So is it like the death of the not smart terminal?
I mean, the way that I use Warp is basically through English at this point. So using something like raw terminal commands, it's like you still need to do it maybe 20% of the time. And if you might want to do it because you're just more efficient and it's faster than asking an LLM to do something for you. You might want to do it because, like, I don't know, there's some particular command that you know way better than the LLM. But the primary way that I use the terminal today, the way that I use Warp, is just by asking it to do things in English. And so, yeah, I think your analogy is actually pretty good. The, you know, things like Bash or ZSH, it's becoming, it's the same thing that's happening to code in that, you know, we're just all moving up a layer of abstraction. Instead of like writing commands or writing code, we're writing prompts. We're telling the computer to do things, and the computer via the LLM or via an agent is translating our intent into code and into commands. And so I think that makes like the shell dead, but I don't think that makes like the terminal dead, in the sense that the terminal itself is like, it's just turning into this agentic development environment where you still use a lot of the things that are like natural to use in the terminal. Like you have an input, you have these panes, you have, you know, if you need to, the ability to run terminal commands. But, you know, in Warp, our kind of attitude towards this is like, build the right product for working with agents. And that has, you know, it's like primarily natural language interface. It has some things that you might find actually in an IDE, like a file tree and a code diff view. But it's all geared around this brand new workflow where it's, you know, I'm just sitting there telling my computer what to do in natural language.
Interesting. A lot of questions I have, you know, as a follow-up for that. This is going to be a lot of fun. But you said you were leading like engineering teams at Google. You have been, principal engineer roles at, in the past. How has the transition been, before we dive into the nitty gritty stuff, like from CTO to CEO, like from, you know, like technical elegance, now that you're responsible for ARR and, you know, milestones like Series B and things like that. Do you miss do you miss that, or like, yeah, how's the transition?
It's an awesome question on how the transition's been. So first off, I still get to do some coding, which if you ask me what I like doing most, it's I like building stuff. That's like by far the most fun for me. Building software is fun. I also am really like building the company at this point, which means how do you attract the right people? How do you attract the right investors? How do you market the product? How do you sell it? And so I think it's actually been a really cool transition. In the background of being an engineer, I typically will approach even these domains that I don't know that well, like marketing or sales, from an engineering mindset. And I find that the mindset and the training of being like a developer and an engineer is actually an awesome, just fundamental problem solving background. So it's been okay, but there definitely are, you know, there are challenges. There are things that I would actually rather, you know, not spend my time doing. I would rather be building than doing HR or finance or, you know, various like operational things. You know, when you're on your own doing a company, lots of stuff can just like go wrong. You don't really have the safety net of being at a big company to bail you out. And so there's a super duper high level of stress when it's you're responsible, not just for like building the product, which like, I think you have more control over, but you're responsible for this question of like, does the market want the product? How do you position the product? How do you sell it? So I don't know. It's been I guess if I had to sum it up, I'd say it's been like an awesome, but sometimes very painful learning experience, but it's been good.
Yeah, I understand. And I'm sure you will notice that, but no, I'm sorry, cut. Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm sure you have seen this in the field, that some people are like quite passionate about using a terminal, even if there's a UI. It's like an ego thing. Like, I'm going to use terminal. I'm not going to use the UI. And you have emphasized on a product first culture. So in this community of developers that worship this minimalist terminal and their whims and stuff, you know, how do you manage the internal tension of building something that's like a heavyweight tool that includes like a, you know, 300-400 megabytes of footprint and some features that some people might. Have you seen that? Like, some people are like, okay, I don't need this.
Of course.
I'm just going to be using my old school terminal and my bash.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, definitely. Yeah. So thoughts on like kind of like terminal purists versus like, you know, people who are more open to a different way of working. I guess like my high level thought is like developers are varied. Developers have super strong preferences and that's cool. I don't expect Warp to appeal to every single developer in the world. In fact, there's never been a developer product that has. And I think one of the fun things about being a developer is like, you're gonna want to pick your tools. You're gonna want to customize them, make them work to your liking. Some people want a terminal that is just like exactly like it was 40 years ago. But some people, a lot of people are kind of more like me, which is like, why the hell am I using this thing that worked like it worked 40 years ago? And like my approach to product development in general is like, I'm trying to build something that helps people solve whatever problem they have. So when, you know, when we talk about hiring product first engineers, I really want people who are like able to look at a problem sort of from first principles to set aside sort of like whatever pre-existing biases there are. And like, you know, a good bias to me is like TUI, terminal UI versus GUI. And I'm just like, I could not give two shits about this distinction. Like, it's like, what's the UI that's going to help me actually achieve the thing that I'm trying to do most quickly? And from Warp's perspective, it's like, it might have some aspects which are very, very text-based, keyboard-based, terminal-based, and it might have some aspects that are more graphical. And just like, it's such a weird artificial distinction to me to spend a lot of time like, you know, bitching about one way or the other. But I do respect that developers are going to want to work in their own individual way. And like, it's, I think one sure way for us to not succeed is to try to build something that works for every single developer. And so, you know, we try to make a bet on what we think the best, you know, product experience is. We bias fairly heavily towards like, honestly, like, you know, we're using the thing every day to build all of our software. And so what's going to be best there? We bias a bunch towards like, what do developers who like the product tell us that they want us to do? Yeah. And we're, you know, we're just trying to build something that we think is generally useful. And so that's kind of the attitude.
I get that a lot. I work in cloud automation field. So okay. Some people are like, no, I'm going to implement all of these things myself.
Yeah.
Need an automated solution and things like that. But speaking of like, you know, comparisons, you rank, like you scored number one on Terminal Bench, right?
Yeah.
But benchmarks are like, I mean, okay, this is cool. But in real world, if we have, let's say, a really, I don't know, multi-repo corporate code base with 30 years of technical debt, how do your agents avoid that hallucination, you know, when you're dealing with like really old code samples?
Yeah, that's a great question about like, it's kind of like, how real are these benchmarks? How do they apply to real world situations? So I do think that the benchmarks are super duper useful. And one of the ways that we really did improve the quality of our agent was by doing a lot of work to get to number one on Terminal Bench and getting in the top few spots on Suibench. It's just like, it's good to have that public yardstick to hold yourself to. But to your point, it's like a contrived set of like test cases. The models may be trained towards them to some extent. And if that's your only way of measuring the quality of the agent, you're going to end up with something that's probably not that great in real world situations. So the answer is like, you have to measure way beyond those benchmarks. And you have to measure based on like actual coding tasks that people are trying to do. So we do things like capturing like evals from real data sets, that like our users are doing. It's all sort of anonymized, but it's like, we're able to sort of see what are real use cases where our agent is succeeding, or, you know, more like where it's failing. And we're able to sort of take that real world usage of the agent, code around it, and try to improve it and see if over time we can track improvements of it. You know, we also look at a lot of other signals, which are just like, you know, what is the user sentiment around using our agent? Like, we can see if people are like swearing at our agent or something. It's like you can tell when the agent isn't doing well, and then you improve it. And the types of things that you do to improve it are like you improve the context engineering around it for the most part. So you're improving like how does it manage the context window? How do you prompt it? How do you define the tool calls? We're looking at things like fine tuning models for certain use cases, but it's a whole like way of doing product development with these agents where you really need like a dedicated effort of like measuring how they're doing, or you're just going to go in circles trying to sort of like tweak a prompt here, or tweak the context there. So it's very, very data driven.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the business strategy.
Sure.
So you recently shifted to a bring your own key model for AI credits. Like I can bring my Anthropic key, my OpenAI key, right?
We have both. So you have a choice as a user. So you can, okay, you can buy the inference through us, or if you already have an account with one of these other places, you can bring your API key. And
so that was just about just making it more accessible to people.
Basically, yeah. Like I think developers want choice, and for something like this, like it doesn't harm our product at all. And so we're just like, okay, let's let developers choose how they want to do this. And so, you know, it's honestly, it's more like 10% of developers or so will choose to bring their own, and 90% will use the inference that we provide. I think just because it's easier, honestly. So that's kind of how it shakes out. So, but I think it's really nice for developers to have a choice of how they do it.
Of course I have to, well, I do agree with that. Yeah. I think it's a really good move. But we do have to talk about, because there are so many tools in the market.
Totally. Competitive.
I know you're talking about, but by the way, it's like definitely it makes sense because, I mean, I use Warp every day. I'm quite pro to, I'm quite pro to changes. So I do use Warp every day. But the premise is that, you know, this the terminal is like the gateway to the developer, right?
Yes.
And that's what, you know, Warp does. We are, okay, cool. But we do have these IDEs, you know, like cursors becoming more agentic, and yep, they are sort of like subsuming the terminal functions. So is terminal destined to remain the source of truth, or is it like being hollowed out by more visual agentic interfaces?
Super interesting question on whether or not the IDE will subsume the terminal. What's interesting that we're seeing is the IDEs are becoming more like the terminal, because editing code by hand is something that you just, as developers, are doing less and less of. And so all the features of the IDE that are around, like, you know, IntelliSense or like, you know, multi-cursor editing and stuff, it's just like it doesn't matter in a world where an agent is writing 80 or 90% or 95% of your code. And so you do see a move from the IDEs to become more like the terminal. And then on the flip side, you have something like Warp, which started as the terminal, which I think is actually the better agentic form factor. And I think actually, I don't think that's even controversial at this point. Like you can see with the rise of things like Claude Code or Gemini CLI or Warp itself, that the terminal is the right form factor. We are adding some aspects of the IDE into something that we're, you know, calling like an agentic development environment. It's a term that we made up, which I actually think is catching on now, which is cool. And so I guess my real answer here is like, I don't think the terminal or the IDE is actually the long-term answer. I think that the long-term answer here is something that is built for agents, but I think that it's more likely or a better fit to have grown out of the terminal than to have, kind of shrunk from the IDE, if that makes sense. So these tools are all starting to look somewhat similar, but I do think that they're going to look, at the end of the day, they're going to look much more like a terminal than they are going to look like an IDE.
Okay, interesting. I appreciate how developer-focused Warp is, because people are like, we want open source, we want offline-first tools, We don't want that barrier for adoption. And you remove the login requirement. You have now bring your own key and all these other things. So I think that's a good move. And because this landscape is like evolving so fast, some new thing comes out like, you know, every other time. So you have to keep up or you get left behind. And I'm very happy to see like, even like the Warp, I mean, the Slack channel for Warp and give us some ICP for giving feedback. And like in the next version, I'm literally seeing people sort of like implement that. So that's quite cool. All right. MCP. So this is another like business strategy question, like obviously like quite big right now, but why was like the MCP, the protocol, why did you think that was like the right standard to bet on for Warp, right? Because from a business standpoint, is it like you did not want to build proprietary context features that your competitors cannot replicate?
Yeah, great question on like adopting the standard here. So our attitude is we want to be in the ecosystem, good citizens in the ecosystem. We want to adopt the standards and we want to be interoperable. So for something like MCP, this was like a super easy decision. It's, you know, we think the standard is kind of catching on. We think it'll help our people who are using Warp. We think it'll help people who want to try Warp if they set up already existing MCP configs. And so, yeah, we're really trying to play well here. We used to have like a warp.md file as another example, and you can still have a warp.md file, but now the primary thing we support is agents.md, which is the standard one. And we just, we support the skills standard also. And so we want to support developer choice in what their agent tool is. And we think being sort of standards compliant is the right way to do it. By the way, Warp is also an amazing place to use other agent tools. And so we're building stuff to make this experience better. Like if you want to use Claude Code in Warp, that's cool. Like we want that to be a great experience. If you want to use Codex in Warp, we want that to be a great experience. Like there's some things that we're adding around like, well, how can you see your diffs? How can you, see your file trees? How do you speak to those agents? And we're just trying to make Warp the best place if you're like a developer who's trying to build really, valuable, interesting software to do it. And I think betting on being a good part of the ecosystem rather than building proprietary standards is definitely the way to go there.
Yeah. And you mentioned the warp.md file. Now it's called agents.md.
Yeah.
So you can basically give the agents project specific rules. So
exactly.
I think that's quite cool. Yeah. But what about like if every developer tool starts requiring its own, rules file for context, how do you eliminate the prompt-based technical debt for teams to maintain?
So we support the other ones too. So if you have a Claude.md or a cursor rules or I think Codex is now on the standard one. So like I said, we don't want a world of fragmented agentic tooling, because I think that sucks for developers. So we want to be supporting the other people's tools. And if other places like Claude or whatever are leaning into their own proprietary one, we're still going to try to support it if we can to make it easy for people who want to use both Claude and Warp.
That's a very positive and open-minded thought. And I think this is how DevTool companies succeed. So I think that's very cool. Because this is one space. So I think giving them developers the choice.
It's one space. It's changing. Yeah. Like, who knows what the tool of choice is going to be in a couple weeks. I do know that, like...
But you're like weeks, which is... Yeah, makes sense.
It changes so fast. And like, I think if you're trying to lock developers in, they hate that. And so... Again, one of the cool things about Warp is like we support a ton of different models. So you can choose models. We're trying to support different harnesses. And I think there's just intrinsic value in being this workbench where developers can get stuff done. If you want to use the stuff that's built into Warp, which, I'm biased, it's awesome. We want to make that really easy. but we certainly don't want to force people to do that. That's, I think, like a not a, it's not something that works with developers.
Cool. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the future, right? We are currently transitioning from, there was phase one, autocomplete. We had our GitHub Copilot and whatnot. Then came like interactive agents. We have Claude Code. We have Vault 2.0, for example. And now the next phase, now the next phase is automated development. So background agents are solving issues, cleaning code bases, performing PR reviews asynchronously. I'm sleeping, getting my coffee, going for a walk.
So I'm running an agent right now.
Yeah. So with this automated development, we're like, this agent is fixing my bugs for me. If an ambient agent makes like an autonomous change that is like causing some outage, or there's like a production issue, or it's costing the company money, who is responsible?
Yeah, that's a funny question. What happens when the ambient agent starts bringing down your systems? So I guess just to step back, I do agree with the three phases there. I think it was completions, and then last year was the year of interactive agents. So you're sitting there, you're prompting, you know, your agent to do something. And I think 2026 is the year of like cloud agents or ambient agents, where agents are doing more and more automated work. I think if you want to deploy, to answer your question, I think if you want to deploy cloud agents and have them work, you need like control. I think you can't have chaos, because they, you know, the more autonomy you want to give one of these things, the scarier it is, the more damage they can do. On the flip side, the more amazing stuff they can do. And I do think we're going to be in a world where if you're a company, you're going to not have any choice if you want to be competitive, but to start deploying lots of agents to do automated things. And so we're doing this at Warp with our own agent automation platform, which is called Oz. And we have agents that are going, they're checking for fraudulent Warp usage all the time. They are updating our documentation in the background. They are probing for like security holes in our cloud setup. And so it's awesome. But you know, if you want to do this effectively, you need something where you can track all these agents. You need something where you can totally control what permissions they have. If they do something stupid, like cause an outage, I think you want to be able to very quickly see like, what the heck did they do? So that means like get the audit log. You might want to be able to get into their session, so you actually have the context and can actually ask them to reverse it. And you need the ability to like totally put sandboxing in containers around them and make sure that you're very, very strict with permission. So with this rollout of like agent orchestration, ambient agents, I think it's going to become super duper important for companies to do this in like a controlled, like observable way. And so I think that's like a big area of investment for probably for all the like coding agent companies, but definitely for Warp this year.
Yeah, I agree. And this is the big question around developer trust, right? Especially like in AI, everyone's asking like, okay, where is my data being processed? And is it like on device? Is like, you know, running locally, where what's happening with my data? Then sovereignty comes into picture, and it's just like a whole can of worms. But speaking of Warp, you offer like a network log. So it basically, you know, it can show you exactly what data is being sent to the cloud. But the question that community may have is that the core application remains proprietary. And you as a company for your messaging, how do you deal with this friction that is being created with the, if I talk about the Linux community, for example, they have this trust but verify culture.
Yeah.
So how does a company like Warp build an agentic identity while maintaining a closed source mode?
It's a great question. And we've actually talked a bunch about like, is it right for us to maintain the closed source app or not in the future? That's still an open discussion for us, because I do see value of maybe open sourcing the actual code. But even without open source in the code, the way that we approach it is by trying to make all of the sort of like data visible. So for instance, if you're, you know, if you're using Warp as a terminal, like I said, you can see complete transparency into what's being sent to the network. If you're using Warp as a orchestration platform through Oz, then I think it's actually a benefit that all the data is tracked for reasons like the outage scenario that you brought up. So like one of the things I think if you're a company that you're going to want is you're going to want a record of every agent conversation, for instance. And right now, the way that these tools are being deployed at companies, like if a company is using Warp or a company is using, well, not Warp because Warp has the tracking, but if you're just using some random coding agent CLI, it's kind of like the developer, it's the Wild West, you know, that CLI can do anything on their laptop. If you're like, you know, in the security org of the company, you can't see what that developer is doing. You can't tell if an agent has compromised someone's laptop. And so I actually think that from a like security perspective, the way that things are going to go is much more like traditional SaaS, where if you're trying to like, again, this is more the company use case than the individual use case, but you're going to want complete visibility and auditability across your entire organization of everything that these agents are doing, because it's too dangerous to have individual developers being like, okay, I don't want to share telemetry or whatever. That's going to cause, you're going to have problems that are caused by agents and you're not going to be able to track them. So, you know, there is this like open source question, but I think the bigger concern for companies is really around like the first thing you brought up, which is like, what's happening with the data? How can I see, how can I control how agents are using the data?
I want to touch a little bit on open source. This is my last question around the open source ecosystem, because there was a leaked memo by Google. Some of the board members, I think, I mean, I can't verify this, might be Sundar Pichai, but the memo said that people are not going to pay for proprietary models when they can get similar performance from the open source sort of like community. But in a world where we are now with open weight models and like local LLMs, is like a proprietary context orchestrator like Warp sustainable, or will the open source community eventually build like a free Warp that runs entirely on device with Llama 4?
This is an awesome question. So in general, I think I would be like thrilled if open models got to the like got to frontier quality, because by far the biggest thing that's hard for Warp economically right now is like the cost of inference through like the big frontier model providers. So part of that premise I think would just be like freaking awesome for Warp if the quality of the open source models was there. It's not there yet. This is a problem. Like there's a significant difference between using like Opus 4.6 or GPT-5.3 or Gemini 3 Pro and using GLM 4.7 or whatever the latest Kimi or Quinn model is. It's still a hypothetical situation. And then if, you know, the question about the harness, I do, again, it's like, there is a world where maybe we make the harness open for Warp. The question for Warp is like, where do we want to build our business, right? Like, so we're very much like, we're trying to build a business. We're not like it's not just like a project, right? So if we think it will be more valuable to monetize or to build a business around some other aspect of Warp, and I think the other aspect that would make the most sense if it wasn't our harness is just like, it's around the whole integrated experience of how do you build with agents. So everything from the UI to the harness to the orchestration platform, what we're trying to do is make like a really, really first-class product experience. People will try to sort of emulate that in open source, but it's a lot of work. Like we have a lot of people working on it a lot, and the open source community could easily do it too. But I do think like we're going to keep leaning into trying to build this best product and finding ways to monetize it. Yeah.
So I did want to ask that question because we see this with AI coding IDEs.
Yeah.
There's like Glyne open source project and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I do agree. And the reason I love Warp is, first of all, the reason I mentioned before around how, you know, seriously you take the developer feedback. But I see Warp as like positioning between the ideal interface for the evolution that we spoke about. So
yeah.
Like you're sitting at the intersection of the file system. There's the shell.
Exactly.
And there's the cloud as well. So
yeah.
When we talk about like IDE-based agents, they are constrained with the editor's abstractions, you know.
Yes.
Terminal-based agents, on the example, can navigate that whole like entire infrastructure. Because I'm saying this because I do use Warp every day. So things like, I mean, I use it for like, it would restart the servers, query the database for me, execute the tests in a way that mirrors my understanding as a human developer, my workflow with multiple tools that I'm using. So, which is why I love Warp. And yeah, they're not paying me to say this. I do use it every day.
We're not paying you right now.
Good. Cool. All right. I want to talk about the future a little bit. And I know we are almost, we have been talking for a while, but let's talk a little bit about the future. So I think like this is infamous question, developers losing jobs and, you know, whatnot, but it's been going around for a while. Like what happens to developers' jobs? Well, I think developers are going to be tech leads and they're just going to be like tech leads for a group of agents. Because if an agent can already like ship 30%, 40%, 50% of my PRs and stuff, my question is like, when you hire people or when you work with engineers, what does a high value, the top 10% of the human work that happens, what does that look like in the next five years? Is everyone like an agent architect, prompt auditor, or something like that?
Yeah, it's an awesome question on like what makes a high value developer in the next few years. I do think it's some of what you said. So what does development look like? Increasingly, it looks like managing agents. And I don't mean managing from like I'm like a human manager. It means that like tech lead managing, meaning can you help those agents come up with good plans? Can you make sure that they're building stuff that fits with the overall system architecture? Can you like add the supplemental context around what needs to be built that those agents don't have? And it doesn't look like writing a lot of code. Like already, it's very rare that I'm like handwriting code. In fact, I still contribute to our code base a lot, but I do it entirely through agents. So I don't think it looks like writing code. I do think it looks like still, at least for the next couple of years, understanding code, being able to code review, being able to verify what an agent has built. I think that the most important skills for an engineer are like adaptability, because this stuff is changing. I don't know, it's almost changing weekly. Like the way that I develop now compared to 6 months ago is vastly different. And if I had like a fixed mindset, you know, as opposed to a growth mindset and was stuck in like doing autocomplete right now, I would be getting way less done. So I think adaptability is a super important trait, like the ability to learn how to use the new tools. I think general problem solving is a really important trait. So if you're someone who's, you know, I still recommend getting a CS education, because I think it's less about writing code and it's more about like, how do you methodically solve problems? And I feel like that's actually still a super key skill. You have to be like better at that than the agent. I think it's about architecture and big picture thinking, and it's about product sense, honestly, because engineers more and more are going to be like, you know, you're stepping away from the code, but you're not stepping away from the problem that you're trying to solve with the code. So that's kind of what I think is going to happen. If I were getting into development, those are the things that I would focus on.
Yeah, no, I agree. When something becomes easier to do, more people will do it.
Yeah.
So it's not like, because it's in the end, it's just the way we communicate, because there was assembly language, then came like modern programming language that do a lot of stuff for you, like garbage collection and whatnot. And now there's like AI, so you can just literally code in your natural language, your prompts, and so it's just like a way to communicate with the machines. I do love your point around still getting a CS education, because I always tell people like focus on the fundamentals.
Definitely.
Because then things, you know, keep evolving. But when your fundamentals are clear, it's also a great way to escape the hype cycle. If you are good with fundamentals, you know what is hype and what is not hype.
Just to like add, like when we hire engineers at Warp, we still do the same screening for fundamentals that we always do. And actually, the biggest like issue that new engineers at Warp actually sometimes will have is an over-reliance on the agent. And if you don't spend the time to actually learn the architecture, learn the frameworks in a way where you have more context than the agent, then you have a problem. And so I think the tech lead analogy is kind of apt. It's actually, you know, that's cool. It's hard though. It's hard to be a tech lead. And so that means like, if you want to be the tech lead, you really got to understand the system and understand how to direct the agent. So it's making it, it's like easier to do something now than it ever has been. And it's kind of, but being the tech lead of a group of agents is like hard and takes a lot of like effort and skill and context. So I think like the best engineers are going to be the ones who actually learn how to do that well.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. There was a saying like AI won't replace you, but a person using AI will.
Yes.
I don't know who said that, but I read that somewhere.
Yeah.
It was really, really nice. This was a lot of fun, Zach. Thank you so much.
Yep.
Folks, I recommend checking out Warp. There's no like, I mean, there's just go to warp.dev.
Yep.
You're going to find it. And the community is super helpful. So if you have any questions, just reach out to them. And yeah, this was a lot of fun. Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. This was an awesome conversation.